Okay, we left. We finished the last one with a question about the Barthrosians, and that was what, about 35 BCE when there was a split between Barthros and the Zadokites?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, that's where we left.
Okay.
And you want to take up from there?
I'll take it up from there. Does anybody have any questions, or should I just start?
Well, you start, and I'll have some questions about this after you get on into it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so the question we raised last week was that Maimonides states that the rabbis of the Talmud, they condemned Antigonus because they said that they quoted an aphorism, which is wise men, be careful in your words. And they say that Antigonus was careless in his words, because at his lecture he stated to the people, he said, do not be as those servants who serve the master in order to gain a reward, but be as those servants who serve the master not for the purpose of reward. And because of that statement, the Tzadok, who was the head of the Sadducees, and Bisus, who was the head of the Barthusians, is that what the transliteration is? The Bisusim in Hebrew. So those two people were listening to that lecture, and they walked out of the lecture, and they said what the rabbi said is that there is no reward for anything that we do that's good. So they abandoned the concept of the world to come, the afterlife, and they started on a route that was on a route which denied this truth of Torah. In other words, they became apostates, and the rabbis blamed Antigonus for making that statement. Of course, the obvious question, and Maimonides quotes this right here, and the obvious question is, then how come in the Mishnah, which is in the Ethics of the Fathers, Antigonus' statement in full? If that statement is so harmful, how could they, and they criticize Antigonus for making the statement at a lecture, so why did they preserve it for the masses? There were many things that the rabbis held knowledge that they had, but they held it privately. This is no secret that the rabbis had knowledge which was secretive. And as a matter of fact, the Midrashim were never intended to be written down. And that's why the Midrash is so misunderstood, because the rabbis wrote in the form of parables, and a fool will look at it and just thinks he understands it because it conforms to his emotion. The reason why it conforms to his emotion is because the rabbis used the parable. But they think that the parable itself is literal, and therefore they corrupt the ideas. So the rabbis were well aware of the fact that you cannot allow all knowledge to be conveyed to the masses, and that certain things are only for people that really have the depth of understanding. And for others, you know, you teach them things on their level, but everybody is not capable of understanding everything. So that was the concept. By the way, that's the original concept of Kabbalah. The original concept of Kabbalah is mentioned in the Mishnah, and that is that there was a type of knowledge which was metaphysical, philosophical, and abstract knowledge which was not permitted to be taught to the masses, because they would misconstrue it. They weren't on the level to understand it, and they would distort it and come out with some ridiculous conclusions. This is one of those cases where, that's why the rabbis say, the wise men, be careful with your words. Don't tell someone something that he's not capable of handling. Don't give him a piece of knowledge that he's not capable of handling at his level. You have to advance him slowly and in the proper way. But a given individual is not capable of absorbing a certain piece of knowledge. It might throw him, that one point may throw him off completely. And this is one of the cases where the rabbis criticized Antigonus, because he expounded at this lecture and he made the statement, and it resulted in two apostates. Tzadok was head of the Sadducees, and Bisus was head of the Barthusians. Now, the question, of course, is, so if that's the case, so this statement should have been concealed, and the rabbis never should have revealed it. Certainly it should not be in the Mishnah. Moreover, Maimonides himself quotes it, and he says that they condemned Antigonus, the great And the great scholar Antigonus, they condemned him because they said he made a mistake. But Maimonides himself mentions it. So why does Maimonides mention it? Okay? All right, now, whenever you see something like this, you know, it's like an open contradiction here. You know that there's something lurking behind the scenes here. There's obviously a solution here that is, you have to go a little bit beneath the surface. And I'll tell you what it is. Actually, what Maimonides is doing is he's using a very specific type of method which he uses throughout his writings in the guide, and basically it is a copy of the method used by the Torah itself. The Torah does make certain statements which have very deep meaning, but they're concealed, and you have to be able to search for them, okay? And Maimonides himself, in his guide, if you read his introduction, you'll see that he followed that kind of a method. And he says, in the introduction, he says that things that I wrote, some ideas are not for the masses, but he said I concealed them in a way that they will never figure them out. The only one that will figure it out, and the proper level, and in him it will enlighten, it will not harm. So the scholars continued to write in a cryptic method, which is really based on the beginning of Proverbs, where King Solomon says to listen carefully to the words of the wise and their riddles. And that was really, this goes all the way back to the Torah itself, because the Torah is written in certain places. It conceals certain ideas, and you have to be very astute to be able to pick up the hidden meanings. So this method goes all the way back, King Solomon goes back actually to the Torah itself. And it was the method that was followed by the scholars, and that's why the Midrash sometimes sounds so absurd. It sounds absurd because it represents certain concepts, and it's not wasn't intended as a literal to be taken literally. The reason why they wrote in parables and why the wise men spoke in parables, as King Solomon says, is because in parable you can contain many, many ideas. So it is a very economical way of writing. The Mishnah writes the same way. The Mishnah gives one case, and out of one case you could have 20 halachas, 20 laws. If you wrote them out, it would fill several pages, whereas this way you can condense it into one case. So that's the style of the scholars, basically. Now, that's the problem today, by the way. Everybody reads Kabbalah and thinks they understand it, but they forget that there was an introduction to the Kabbalah, which every single scholar, Kabbalist or Talmudic scholar, agrees on, and that is that you cannot study Kabbalah until you've mastered Talmud. Because the mastery of Talmud means that the person has reached a level of intellectual capacity where he's capable of handling these ideas. However, of course, everybody always feels that they're ready to jump into the most abstract areas without any kind of... People don't like to hear that they have to have it's a prerequisite. Everybody feels they're ready for the ultimate secrets of the Torah. No one, if you tell somebody, I'll reveal a great secret to you, no one's going to say, well, I'm not ready. You see, everybody, man's ego is such that he always thinks he's ready for the deepest secrets, even though he has no real basis or training in anything, usually, most people. Maimonides, again, makes this point in his very important point. He makes it in the Guide for the Perplexed, where he talks about on the study of metaphysics. But at any rate, let us get back to the question. Now, I will tell you what Maimonides, I'm going to tell you what Maimonides is really, the secret that Maimonides is concealing over here, and the same thing that the rabbis did in the Mishnah. And that is... That is as follows. You see, Maimonides gives a little an introduction to that point. And in the introduction, he gives a parable, okay? And he says like this. He says that, let me just find it, hold on a second. He says, just imagine before yourself a young boy. They bring him to the teacher to teach him Torah. And this is certainly the greatest good that you can do, to teach him concepts, ideas, knowledge, educate him. He says, but because the young boy is very young, and he doesn't understand the good of education, he doesn't understand the good of knowledge, so therefore, what the teacher does is, the teacher tells him, and he says to him, look, he says, if you study today, I'll give you candy. So he gives him candy or nuts, actually, the Maimonides, or figs. Those, you know, things that in those days were used as candies. So he tells him, the youngster is very excited, and the youngster does his lessons in order to gain the candy. All right? So he says, and then he says, because the youngster doesn't realize that the good is really the education itself, he thinks that the learning is very tedious, and really it's something he'd rather not do, he'd rather be playing. But because the teacher promises him that he's going to reward him with candy, so he will be willing to spend his time studying and going through the rigor of study in order to gain, to get the candy bar. He says, then he says this same youngster, he says, gets a little bit older. And when he gets a little older, so you can't bribe him with candy anymore. He says, then what you need to do is you tell him, well, I'm going to buy you new clothes, new shoes, new clothes, different things, things that are really on a little bit of a higher level. All right? He says, and the teacher continues to use this method because the teacher realizes that even at this stage, he still doesn't understand the importance of learning for its own sake. So you have to bribe him and offer him something in return for his willingness to subject himself to study. He says, then, of course, the youngster grows a little, gets a little older, and you can't even bribe him with the clothes. So he says, so then what do you tell him? He says, then you tell him, look, if you study, you have a chance to become a scholar. And if you become a scholar, people are going to respect you, and people will praise you, and you'll gain prominence in society. So he says, so then the young man, he says, is moved by that. And he feels that, yes, it's worth it. I'll spend time studying, and then I'll gain the honor. So he says, of course, Maimonides says that all this is really debasing, because the truth of the matter is that the benefit of study and knowledge is for its own sake and for no other sake. And he says that is the truth. And a person who is able to reach that level realizes this, and then he studies only for the sake of the study and the knowledge itself. He recognizes that that is the ultimate good. Okay. Now, the point that Maimonides is making here is that most people, as I mentioned last week, will always look for some kind of a goal. And they're going to do things for something else, okay? But there's another point over here as well, and that pertains specifically to the concept of the afterlife. All right. Now, the reason why people want an afterlife is not for the true reason. They're like the children, you see. They want an afterlife because a part of their instinctual makeup wants this afterlife. All right? It's built into the instinct of man. Man doesn't wish to die. Man wishes to be immortal in some way. And people try to immortalize themselves through fantasy. Like people try to immortalize themselves through their works or through their actions. But man is looking for immortality. Now, that part of his nature that is looking for immortality is really the physical part of his nature. It stems from his instincts. It's not from his soul. Immanuel Kant made a big mistake when he thought that because man has a desire for that proves that he has a soul. That's absolutely false according to Torah. That has nothing to do with the soul. That really stems from the primitive part of man's nature, and the instinctual part that does not wish to die, simply because man conceives, he does not wish to give up his pleasures, and the grave does not sound like an exciting place to be, so therefore he wishes to continue to live, and he wishes to live on forever. And it's like Woody Allen one time said, he says, I don't want to be immortalized through my works, I want to be immortalized by living forever. And that's a true statement. The immortalization through the works, it's kind of a secondary compensation, but it's based on the illusion and the fantasy of immortality in man, which does not stem from his his divine element that stems from his instinctual element. Okay, now, the point over here, is this, that man's instinct desires to live eternally. Now, what Rabbi Antignos explained was precisely that. You see, the Talmud just capsulized it. So he said, don't be like those who serve the master for reward. Actually, that's really a contraction of what his lecture was. Obviously, his lecture was more than that. It wasn't just that one phrase. In his lecture, he explained this concept. He explained that the real immortality of man has nothing to do with man's desire to be immortal. That these are two different things, two different worlds. In other words, his desire to be immortal stems from the emotional part of his makeup. Real immortality has nothing to do with that. Real immortality has to do with the world of knowledge of Torah, or the world of ideas. As a matter of fact, if a person were honest with himself, he would never even study for that reason, because he would realize that what he's going to gain out of the study is a different kind of immortality, not the kind he's really looking for. So in a sense, he's fooling himself, you see. Now this was the concept, this is the dangerous idea, you see, that Antignos revealed in his lecture. When he revealed that, so there were two people there that listened to it, and they said, you know something, the rabbi's right. We've been fooling ourselves. We thought we're going to gain a certain kind of immortality, but we're looking for instinctual immortality. That doesn't exist. And we're fooling ourselves into thinking we're going to gain another kind of immortality. That's not the kind that really we're looking for. So once they realized that, you see, then they went one step further and they said, this is all a delusion. In other words, the concept of an afterlife is a delusion being used to fool us into these things. And who says that there is the other kind of afterlife? So they started to question, and they realized they had been fooling themselves, and they abandoned the entire concept. That's where Maimonides says that. That's where Maimonides says that you cannot. That's why they told Antignos. They said, "Wise man, be careful in your words. Don't reveal to people who are deluding themselves something which is going to destroy them." You see, in other words, like this. Let's go back to the example that Maimonides gave with the youngster. When the youngster, you tell him the benefit of study is in order to get the candy bar. If you would tell him really that this is kind of silly. There's the candy bar isn't really the benefit of the study. So what you, in other words, if you would not fool the child, he would never study. The child, you, in other words, the case of the child, the reason why Maimonides gives that case of the child, is in order to show you, to demonstrate a concept. There's one line of thinking here Maimonides straight through. What he's saying is like this, that sometimes it is for a person's benefit to be deluded. And if you enlighten him too much, and if you don't fool him, then you will be harming him, like the case of the child. In the child's case, you tell the child, well, you study today and we'll get you a candy bar. So what are you telling him? You're telling him the benefit of study is the candy bar. But that's a lie. That's not really true. Now, if you wanted to be truthful to him, you wouldn't fool him that way. You would say, look, the benefit of study is not a candy bar, so I'm not going to give you a candy bar. I'm not going to tell you that's the benefit of study. That's a lie. The benefit of study is its own good. Now, can the child at that level perceive that idea that the benefit of study is its own good? No, he can't. So what's going to happen to the child? He's not going to study. Okay? So therefore, you see that by fooling the child, you are benefiting him. Because it is a delusion. You're deluding him. You're telling him that this is the benefit of study, is the candy bar. And you're giving him the candy bar, putting him in a situation where his mind is being fooled. He's studying because he thinks the benefit of study is to get a candy bar. That's a delusion. But if you didn't delude him, if you didn't give him the candy bar, and you told him the truth, you said the benefit of study is its own value, he wouldn't study. So therefore, you would lose him. So this is precisely, that's why Maimonides gives that parable before before he introduces the case of Antignos. He doesn't want to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. He doesn't want to let everybody see it. And most people, when they read this part of Maimonides, will simply gloss over it and just will not pick it up. But the point he's making is a very simple one, and that is that the true benefit for man is the expansion of his knowledge of Torah, which gives him an approach to God. That is the true benefit, that which continues to exist, because that is something which truly is eternal. The ideas are eternal, and that's the part of man that exists eternally. But that's only good if a person can have the appreciation of such a thing. You see, a person who is living in the instinctual world, he won't even know what we're talking about. They won't even perceive this. And they'll say, who wants that kind of existence? That doesn't interest me. Because a person who doesn't see the joy in learning Torah, a person who doesn't see the benefit of knowledge, doesn't perceive it, and thinks that life is really the great life is like the American society thinks the great life is, it's fame, it's fortune, it's pleasure. If that's what a person thinks is really the essence of existence, then if you tell them, well, look, you should study. You know why you should study? Because when you study, you're going to expand your knowledge, and that's really the greatest thing for man. They will laugh at you. Say, the greatest thing. Greatest. What do you mean? If I'm not successful, if I'm not famous, I don't have any money, and I don't have what we call success. Is life worth living? No, definitely not. They will say, and that's why people go into drugs and drinking. It's in order to escape the fact that their instincts are not being satisfied. Okay. So the point that Maimonides is making is that the afterlife comes in two forms. One form is a delusionary form, which should be employed. We should, in other words, as strange as it sounds, we should fool certain people. Why? Because people in general, before they can appreciate the benefit, the intrinsic value of Torah, we have to have some way to reach them. So therefore, he says, the afterlife is really a very good method. You tell them, you know why you should study? Because you're going to gain a reward. Not like Antigonus said, study for the sake of reward, which means he elaborated on that concept, and he showed him that they're practicing something which is delusionary. He should not have done that, because there were people that were not on their level to appreciate the true good, and they abandoned the other thing because they saw it was an illusion, and then they just became apostates. Okay? That is the concept that Maimonides is disclosing over here. But he does it in a very cryptic way, so that the reader, the casual reader, will not pick it up. But once you see it, and then you read what he says, you'll see precisely what he's saying. Okay, of course, Maimonides concealed it for a very simple reason. For the same reason that the rabbis said that you have to conceal what Antigonus says, and for the same reason that when the rabbis quoted Antigonus, they really contracted it into a very harmless statement that only a really intelligent person will understand what he meant. But the average person will accept it in a religious kind of way. You know, that's true, we should serve God, not for the purpose of reward. It doesn't make any sense, because that's what they're really doing. That's their whole life. But they absorb it into their mind with all the other contradictory ideas, which don't seem to bother them once they're on a religious roll, so to speak, okay? But Torah was meant not just for people who are on a primary religious level, which is an unintellectual level, but Torah really is for the great scholar who sees beyond, a whole world beyond what the average person sees. But you have to be careful. You can't take an average person who has not been exposed to the true good of learning. He hasn't really learned Torah, doesn't know what it means to enjoy Torah, doesn't see the benefit and the light of knowledge, and you're going to tell him that, why should he study? Why should he do anything? So if you're going to strip away from him the fantasy and the illusion of some kind of reward in an afterlife, which he means is his instinctual nature, if you're going to strip that away, what you're going to do is you're going to prevent him from ever coming to the truth. Just like if you didn't delude the child with candy and with clothes and then with honor, and you didn't tell him those things, he wouldn't study. So where would he be? He'd be nothing. So the point that the rabbis are making, that Maimonides is expressly explaining, is that you have to work with people on their level, and sometimes you'll find people that harbor an illusion. Don't destroy the illusion so quickly. The illusion may be leading them to an activity which eventually will permit them to go to a higher level and then shed the illusion in the right time. But if your timing is off, you can you can send them astray, and they will never be able to reach the ultimate good. So that's why Maimonides gives that elaborate parable with the youngster, the little boy, and he gives the example of Antigonus, and he explains how you have to be very careful with this concept of an afterlife. There is a true afterlife, just like there is a true good for knowledge. But you can't tell a youngster the true good for knowledge, you'd be wasting your time. And unless you give him some kind of delusionary gratification, then he's not going to study. So it is wrong to take a person who is not fully developed and to teach him a truth which he's incapable of perceiving and causing him to stray from the course which would eventually lead him to a proper understanding and a genuine life of Torah, which is higher than the emotional religious life that he perceives. Okay? In other words, what Maimonides is saying is, I'm explaining to you certain ideas, but you have to be careful with these ideas because of the fact that not everyone is ready to understand what is meant by the true afterlife. They need an imaginary kind of afterlife, so leave them be until they get to the level where they're capable of true understanding. Don't be like Antigonus, who was careless, and he didn't check his audience when he gave this lecture, and he explained explained that there is an afterlife which is a complete illusion, and once he explained that, there were two people that were incapable of perceiving the value of the true concept of an afterlife, and they abandoned the whole idea of Torah, and they became apostates. That is what Maimonides is saying. So the question, of course, is you should ask me a question now. Any questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
A
direct one. I'm waiting for a direct hit this time.
Okay, we're going to get a couple of direct hits. We'll probably have to turn the tape over before I get to the statement. But I'll talk, and Don will signal me, and I'll go from there.
I'll tell you what. I'm speaking in jest. I'll tell you what my question is. But
okay.
Get it from the tape.
All right, go ahead and do your question, and then I will save mine because I've got a series that I want to ask about what you just said.
Okay. My question is, if that's the case, what right do I have to teach this? Because here...
That was going to be one of my questions.
Okay.
All right, and let me amplify that.
Go ahead.
If you take that idea or that philosophy that... You know, how can you teach this to the masses? Then, therefore, you would have to, the logical conclusion of that is that you could never give public lectures thing other than the simplest of Torah teaching.
No, that's not true. I'll answer that question, too. You just tell me when to go, because I don't know what's going on with those tapes.
All right, well, let's just stop now and turn the tape over, and then we'll go from there.